64-year-old Nita Mayo had an adventurous spirit and a love for travel and exploration. On the morning of August 8, 2005, she planned to take a long trip through the Sierra Nevada mountains for shopping and sightseeing. Driving out of her small town sometime around 11 a.m., Nita mysteriously vanished. 2 days later, her car was found abandoned at a popular lookout spot along California's Highway 108. There was no evidence that a crime had been committed, but there was also no sign of where Nita may have gone. While investigators focused on the challenging terrain nearby, Nita's family believed something sinister had happened. Despite exhaustive searches conducted over several years, not a single shred of evidence was ever found. While some believe Nita may have gotten lost or succumbed to the elements, others considered the possibility that her disappearance could be related to several others which occurred in and around that same spot. Did Nita Mayo wander off the trail, finding herself lost somewhere in the wilderness, or could someone else be responsible for her disappearance? Perhaps even someone she knew. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 147, The Disappearance of Nita Mayo. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine the truly mysterious disappearance of Nita Mayo. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. The show is also on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon available at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions there or directly email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Nita Mayo loved taking long drives through the beautiful scenery of America's countryside. Oftentimes, she'd pack a lunch and find a picturesque location to catch a bite surrounded by natural wonders. No matter how far the journey, Nita always made it back home, until one fateful day in 2005. This is Episode 147, The Disappearance of Nita Mayo. The sweltering heat of a 100-degree day was beginning to fade as late afternoon transitioned to early evening. Dimming sunlight still crowned the peaks of the Sierra Nevada mountains as Sergeant Roland DeMartini drove along California's Highway 108, cutting through the pine-dotted slopes and curving around a plethora of breathtaking views that consistently drew in vacationers, sightseers, and hikers looking to experience the natural beauty. Heading west out of Sonora, the highway traveled towards Donald's Vista, a popular lookout sitting at an elevation of 6,311 feet over the Stanislaus River Canyon and the Donnell Reservoir, before curving sharply south. A slow right turn led the deputy onto a paved forest road just before 108 turned south, leading him towards the small parking lot from which visitors set out along the paved trail that winds around the ridge, offering scenic views without the challenge of hiking difficult terrain or traversing near steep slopes. Signs perched at the entryway to the trail warned travelers not to veer off the paved pathways, as the journey can be extremely perilous, and off-trail hiking is dangerous and ill-advised. As DeMartini turned into the lot, he saw a vehicle. It had been there for several days, though no one thought much of it at the time. It wasn't uncommon for campers to leave their cars behind while they headed off into the wilderness to spend a day or two in the peace and quiet of the mountains. The car, a silver station wagon, matched the description of a vehicle owned by a Nevada woman who had gone missing along Highway 108 2 days earlier. There didn't appear to be anything to suggest a crime had occurred. The car was locked, and personal items could be seen inside, seemingly undisturbed. Finding the car was the first lead in the case, but now, faced with the possibility that the woman may be lost somewhere in the wilderness, and with daylight quickly fading, the search needed to begin immediately. While investigators were beginning, family members were already boarding flights from across the country to try and locate the 64-year-old mother and grandmother. Nita Mary Robertson was born on February 9, 1941, to parents James and Kathleen in Salford, England. Not a great deal of information has been made available about Nita's early life, outside of the mention that she had at least one sister, and was reported to have been very polite, intelligent, and hardworking. We do know that in 1962, Nita married an American airman, immigrating to the United States with him 2 years later in 1964 as Nita Mayo. The couple settled in Enid, Oklahoma, where they would go on to have four children, three daughters and one son. Nita would go on to become a licensed nurse, her interest in the medical field being something which would remain throughout her life. In the early 90s, after her children had grown and left home starting families of their own, Nita was offered a job which would carry her across the country to Nevada. Excited by the opportunity and with her kids living their own lives, Nita decided to take the job. Aside from the new options the job would open for her career, it would also feed into Nita's interest in getting to know more of the country. According to her children, Nita had an undeniable interest in the sights of the United States. Her daughter, Tracy, explained to KOLO News 8, quote, "Getting to know all parts of the United States was something she enjoyed, and she loved the scenery. She was always putting us in the car and just driving to discover things," end quote. It seemed Nita's interest in exploration was something that stuck with her throughout her life and may have played a role in her decision to take a long drive along Highway 108 the day she vanished. It wouldn't have been the first time she packed a picnic basket and drove over to Yosemite or along the Sonora Pass. In August of 2008, Nita was living in Hawthorne, a small town in western Nevada and the county seat of Mineral County, just under an hour from the California border. At the time, she was employed at Mount Grant General Hospital, a little over a mile southwest from her home on H Street. Nita's supervisor, Sharon Marshall, described her as independent, reliable, and responsible, noting she had received praise from the medical staff for her knowledge and hard work. On the morning of Monday, August 8, 2005, Nita was preparing to take a day trip. According to her friend, Pat Beavers, Nita had explained that she'd be taking the Sonora Pass to do some sightseeing and maybe some shopping. According to Beavers, Nita had told her that she would call when she arrived home that evening, but the call never came. On their listing for Nita, Texas Equisearch explains that Beavers never received the call and at the time didn't think much of it, assuming Nita had arrived late and didn't want to disturb her. It wasn't uncommon for Nita to go off on long day trips by herself, and she had always come back, until this particular trip. Nita had never missed a scheduled shift at work, not without advance notice. So when she failed to arrive for her shift on the morning of Tuesday, August 9th, there was a lot of concern. Multiple calls to her home failed to get a response, so it was decided someone should go check on her. Jan College, a co-worker at Mount Grant, made the short drive to Nita's H Street home to see if she was there, but there was no answer at the door, and Nita's car wasn't parked in the driveway. College followed up, reaching out to Beavers, who told her about Nita's traveling plans. Concerned, the decision was made to report her missing, and both the California and Nevada Highway Patrol were notified. Sharon Marshall later told the Reno Gazette Journal, quote, "She is a very responsible and reliable person who wouldn't have missed her shift. We want her back," end quote. According to the official timeline, Nita was last seen at 10 a.m. on the morning of August 8th, when she sat down to have breakfast with Pat Beavers. The two friends chatted about life and work at which time Nita explained her plans to drive to the western side of the Sierra Nevada by way of Highway 108 Sonora Pass. It would be a long trip, approximately 3 hours each way, but Nita was planning on returning later that evening. It's believed that after breakfast, she eventually rolled out of town at approximately 11 a.m. I should note, several sources state that Nita originally planned to take this trip with a friend, but after the friend canceled, she decided to go on her own. Had the trip gone according to plan, Nita should have arrived home sometime between 7 and 9 p.m. Nita's family was notified of her disappearance and began making travel plans to come out to California to speak with investigators as well as assist in searches. After Nita was reported missing, authorities didn't exactly have a specific location to search. All they knew at the time was the route she was planning to take, which stretched out over 140 miles and would lead her onto Nevada State Route 359, California 167, I-395, and then Highway 108. Law enforcement was alerted to be on the lookout for Nita or her vehicle. Since her car had yet to be located, Nita's family considered it possible she could have run off the road or had car trouble, trapping her far from anyone who might be able to help. And up in those mountains, cell phone reception isn't great. I should note, this particular route would only be possible during warmer months. When winter sets in, Highway 108 is closed in certain areas, where there's the threat of winter weather making the road dangerous or even impassable, which will later hinder search efforts in this case. It wouldn't be until the evening of Wednesday, August 10th, more than 48 hours after Nita had last been seen, that Tuolumne County Sheriff's Deputy Sergeant Roland DeMartini came across her silver 1997 Mercury Sable station wagon parked at Donald's Vista. The discovery of Nita's car was the first solid lead investigators had found since she'd been reported missing, and initially, it was hoped that the car and or its location might help them in tracking down the missing woman. Unfortunately, the vehicle and its contents would result in investigators having more questions than answers. The location of Donald's Vista is approximately 120 miles to the west of Nita's home, heading towards the eastern side of the Sierra Nevadas. This seemed to imply that Nita was likely on her way home when she parked there. However, whether or not Nita was the one who left her car in that spot has been the source of a lot of debate. Investigators examined the vehicle and noted several details. Firstly, there didn't appear to be any sign of a struggle at the scene. The car was neatly parked, and its interior was neat and organized. Nothing to suggest the car had been searched through or even driven by an individual other than Nita. Investigators did speak to an employee of the California Department of Transportation who noted that he had seen the vehicle parked there on both Monday the 8th and Tuesday the 9th, suggesting it had been there since Nita had gone missing. The gas tank was full and the keys were found inside, though the driver's side door had a coded entry panel, meaning that Nita could have left the keys herself and still been able to access the car by punching in her security code. Beyond the keys, police also found Nita's purse, cell phone, and wallet, which contained her credit cards and ID. The only items that appeared to be missing were her prescription sunglasses, which her daughter Tracy explained she couldn't see without, and her camera. There were two items found in the car which suggested Nita had made it beyond Donald's Vista the day she vanished, though. Police found a magnet and a receipt which was traced back to the small town of Strawberry, some 12 miles west of the lookout. This was apparently a town Nita had mentioned she planned to stop in when speaking to her friend the morning she was leaving. Based on those details, police surmised that Nita may have been heading home, driving east, when she decided to park at the lookout spot, perhaps with the intention of walking the paved pathway and taking photographs of the scenic view. It was theorized that something might have gone wrong, with Nita either veering off the path and possibly slipping along the rocky, steep terrain. P- Police also considered that Nita could have experienced some kind of a health issue, which may have incapacitated her, though her daughter Tracy disagreed, telling the Modesto Bee, quote, "As far as I know, she was in perfect physical condition. She was fine," end quote. Nita's friends agreed, saying there were no indications of any physical or mental issues. For police, though, they had to begin somewhere, and for the time being, Donald's Vista was all they had. Nita's family, however, believed it was more likely she had been abducted or accosted by someone along the way, and that the perpetrator had likely parked her car there. Outside of the fact that Nita was reportedly extremely afraid of heights, she also wasn't much of a hiker. Matt Taylor, one of her son-in-laws, spoke to the Modesto Bee and explained that his mother-in-law was not the type to just wander into the wilderness, saying, quote, "I went hiking with her in Yosemite, and she was strictly a trail hiker. She would have stayed on the paved trail. She was not a scrambler," end quote. While investigators were determined to search the area, believing that Nita was likely somewhere in the surrounding wilderness, almost none of Nita's family believed she would be found there. Despite their doubts about the location, her family were focused on participating in searches and covering every inch of land in hopes of finding any clues which might suggest where Nita had gone. They were also jumping into action rapidly to get the public involved, producing missing persons flyers and speaking with any news agency that would listen, wanting to get the story to as many people as they could. As Tracy told the Reno Gazette Journal, quote, "I'm desperate to get the word out. She would not have left all of her things in her car and not returned to it," end quote. A massive search was launched, with search and rescue teams from Tuolumne, Calaveras, and Mono counties all called in to assist. A helicopter was provided by the California Highway Patrol to fly out over the steep, dangerous areas and the canyon down below. While tracking dogs were also brought in, they were never able to pick up Nita's trail. In fact, the only place the dogs indicated the missing woman's scent was in the car and directly next to it. But there was no trace of Nita along the path, nor anywhere else around the lookout. Despite exhaustive efforts made by searchers, not a single clue was discovered. No cloth, no footprints, nothing to suggest Nita had ever set foot on the paved path of Donald's Vista. On Saturday, August 13th, a second major search was initiated. Lieutenant George Ruckman of the Tuolumne Sheriff's Department explained that all search efforts were being run through the Office of Emergency Management in Sacramento, and they were hoping they would find something. In addition to previously mentioned search and rescue teams, there were also volunteers from the Marine Mountain Warfare Training Center, as well as more than 30 people who had answered the family's call for searchers to move through the canyon, covering trails, roads, and campgrounds. Experts were brought in from Yosemite Mountaineering and rappelled down more than 750 feet from the overlook, but came up empty-handed. Due to the lack of results, the searches were put on hold pending direction from investigators. While official search efforts had been pulled back, Nita's family were still doing all they could to try and find her. Tracy and her sister Shelley distributed flyers in Sonora and along Highway 108 while continuing to push for media coverage. Tracy, when speaking to the Modesto Bee, made it clear that no one in the family was going to be giving up, saying, quote, "We can't let this go. We just can't. We still have hope. It's so overwhelming, it's almost too much. But I honestly believe that somebody saw something. We are still desperately and urgently seeking her," end quote. Linda Fleischer, the owner of a nearby resort, told reporters that her son had assisted the family in searches along the canyon and back roads, but she also made it clear that neither she nor the family believed Nita was in that area, and the complete lack of any evidence was beginning to make that clear to everyone involved. After another long week passed, investigators began to come around, explaining that they hadn't found any evidence to place Nita on the mountain, nor had they found anything which would lead them to believe she may have fallen into the canyon below. They had, for a time, thought it was possible Nita could have slipped and fallen while trying to take a photograph, but there simply was no trace of her. While the family was glad investigators were now beginning to look at other possibilities, they also knew they would be faced with the same problem as they had from the beginning. There were no solid leads or clues as to where Nita could be. Around the same time that police were pulling back on search efforts, the Carol Sund Carrington Memorial Reward Foundation got involved, putting up $5,000 for anyone who could provide information on Nita's whereabouts. The foundation had originally been set up by Carol and Francis Carrington after their daughter and granddaughter, along with two others, were murdered near Yosemite National Park by Carrie Stainer in 1999. Their goal was to provide financial assistance to search efforts for missing persons, and their involvement early on in Nita's case allowed her family to expand their search efforts. They would not be the only ones assisting, though, as Tim Miller, the director of Texas Equisearch, got in touch with Tracy and notified her that he would be coming to California to discuss the case and hopefully provide assistance with additional searches. While the family was doing all they could to organize search efforts on their own, Tuolumne Sheriff Dick Rogers held a press conference to present the case to the public. During the conference, he also explained that they were closing off their part of the search after having conducted 4 in total. The final search had involved 6 dog teams, 11 climbing experts, 9 search and rescue volunteers, and 9 Marines. Even NASA had been involved at one time, providing satellite imagery of the area from around the time Nita vanished. Sheriff Rogers explained, quote, "I want to emphasize that this is a missing person investigation. To this date, there is no evidence that a crime has taken place. However, from the get-go, we have not ruled out this possibility and have treated our investigation accordingly," end quote. Sheriff Rogers went on to say that while they would not be searching at Donnell's Vista any longer, the case was still active, and 6 investigators were working on it. In addition to search efforts, 2 fundraisers were organized to help provide additional money for future searches. One, held at the Dardanelle Resort near Sonora, involved music and events, while back in Hawthorne, where Nita lived, a 5K was scheduled to take place in early September. According to the Reno Gazette Journal, a yellow ribbon campaign was also set up to keep awareness of Nita's disappearance in the public eye. While all of this was happening, investigators were trying to track down anyone who might have seen Nita the day she vanished, and in the final days of August, 2 new pieces of information were discovered. Firstly, investigators spoke with a man who was working as a clerk in a strawberry gift shop the day Nita disappeared. The witness remembered seeing Nita in the shop that day, which would confirm for police that Nita had made it that far. As for anyone else who may have been with her or where she may have gone, the witness wasn't able to supply any additional information. However, police became aware of reports of a woman who had been seen in the area that day and may have seen or spoken with Nita. According to the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department, 39-year-old Jewel Jean Rice was having car trouble and was going around asking for help that day. It was believed Rice could have encountered Nita or maybe had been witness to something. Rice, also known as Jewel Jean Atencio, was being sought by investigators who wished to speak with her. While they did not declare her a person of interest, they did produce flyers bearing her image in hopes of tracking her down. Rice was described as being a white female, approximately 5'1" tall, weighing around 185 pounds, with brown hair and hazel eyes. She was listed by police as being from the Colorado Springs area. By the end of August, the FBI began consulting on the investigation. At the time, the Bureau had not opened a file into the case, noting that there was no direct evidence that a crime had been committed, but they were interested in offering their help to local investigators. FBI spokeswoman Karen Ernst, when speaking to the Modesto Bee, described the case as unusual, but noted there had been no ransom demands or anything else to support the belief that an abduction had taken place. For Nita's family, the searching was no closer to being over. As Tracy told the Reno Gazette Journal, quote, "We are still desperate to find our mom and to get word out that she's missing, and we feel the urgency of finding her," end quote. By September 8th, 1 month after Nita had vanished, there had been little progress on her case, and no searches had yielded any helpful results. Her family, who had been staying in the area for a month now, were beginning to feel the crush of financial strain on their own lives back in the states where they lived, not knowing how long jobs would allow them to stay away, nor how long they could afford to. Desperate for any assistance they could get, they made public pleas for anyone who would be able to help them search, on foot, or through the use of all-terrain vehicles, or even on horseback. While the family had to compete against the pressures of their own lives, there was also the coming winter on the horizon. It was a race against the clock, because once snow began dropping in the High Sierra, searches would become almost impossible. Later that month, Nita's son Pete was spending time at his mother's home in Hawthorne when he came across a note. Talking with the Union Democrat, Pete stated, quote, "The note just said she was on the part of the Sonora Pass that her boss had told her about. She was looking out over a meadow and listening to the sounds of the mountains," end quote. Pete explained to reporters that he would be turning the note over to investigators as, at a minimum, it suggested that Nita might have some familiarity with the Sonora Pass area. In mid-October, the family's desperation for help had grown more powerful. Speaking to the Modesto Bee, Tracy explained, quote, "We feel it's absolutely imperative that we get as many people as possible to help us, as we are fully aware that winter is coming to the High Sierra, and we need to find her and bring her home," end quote. Beyond just the need for volunteers to help, the family was also aware that the media was beginning to turn away, as stories about Nita were coming out fewer and further between. A search was organized by Texas Equisearch and the Carol Sun Carrington Foundation to take place that weekend, October 15th, focusing in along the Sonora Pass. Again, however, nothing was found to advance the investigation. A month later, in mid-November, the case took a turn, at least in regards to its classification. While Nita's disappearance had strictly been defined as a missing persons case, the FBI decided to open its own file, classifying it as a missing person with suspicious circumstances. Why exactly the status was changed appears unclear, but the involvement of the FBI offered the promise of expanded searches and a deeper investigation. Discussing the searches, which had been conducted over the previous 3 months, Tracy explained that they were going to be focusing in on Nita's town of Hawthorne, as snow had shut down the Sonora Pass. Tracy explained, quote, "No broken branches, torn clothing, shoes, nothing at all. We had people rappelling down the cliff, dog teams, people on horseback, but they found nothing. No disturbance, no sign of her. We've searched the Sonora area so many times, and now we want to cover the area where she was last seen. We don't even know for sure she drove herself to the mountains, so maybe we're looking in the wrong direction," end quote. As the holidays began approaching, new areas were the targets for searches. Bridgeport, a small town just inside the California state line, was along the way to the Sonora Pass, so it was believed Nita likely passed through and a search should be conducted. In a press release discussing that search, Nita's daughter Shelley added, quote, "The best Christmas our family could hope and pray for is to have our mom back home to enjoy it with us," end quote. Unfortunately, the holidays came and went, and while the Sonora Pass was blocked by heavy snowfall, Nita's children returned home to try and keep their lives together while focusing on new ways to get their mother's story out. But the pain and struggle wouldn't subside, as Tracy explained, quote, "I don't see how any of us can have a guilt-free life without finding her," end quote. For their part, investigators expressed frustration with the lack of information they had to work with. In January, Tracy Tracy appeared on CBS's Early Show, and that appearance resulted in some calls to police, but authorities explained none had resulted in developments. Lieutenant George Ruckman explained, quote, "We're still working on the case. A lot depends on the last best information coming in," end quote. Sadly, there wasn't much coming in, and what was hadn't managed to shed light on Nita's disappearance. A few months later, in May of 2006, Tracy expressed her frustration to the Reno Gazette Journal, stating, quote, "Here's a grandmother with an English accent who gets to a lookout on a beautiful day in the height of tourist season, and we can't find anyone who saw her? Someone had to see something," end quote. Unfortunately, 2006 would pass without any new information. There were more searches, with Nita's family returning to the area to contribute. America's Most Wanted ran a segment on the case, and some tips came in, but they didn't lead anywhere. The second annual 5K took place in August as the family continued to work to keep Nita's story in the press. But without new information, without new leads, without some change, coverage was dwindling. Nita's case was even discussed on Nancy Grace, and while the coverage helped revitalize the situation for a time, the light was beginning to fade. In August of 07, 2 years after Nita vanished, there were another round of searches launched by the family. Let's Bring Them Home, a group which advocates for missing persons, was involved, but again, nothing was found. Soon, days turned to weeks, weeks to months, and months to years. Then, another missing person would raise more questions. 48-year-old Patricia Sue Tallhurst was last seen in Twain Hart, California, on Friday, April 18th, 2014. 4 days later, on April 22nd, her white Toyota 4Runner was found abandoned at Donald's Vista. Much as had been the case for Nita, investigators launched massive searches but never managed to turn up any trace of Patricia. Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department Sergeant Scott Johnson explained that early on, they had received multiple tips a day, but in the weeks following the discovery of the vehicle, leads and tips had begun dwindling. The sheriff's department did, however, express that they had no indication of foul play in Patricia's disappearance. Patricia owned Patty's Shack, a restaurant in East Sonora, and at the time of her disappearance, several friends reported that she'd been experiencing financial problems and may have been depressed. On April 20th, 2 days before her car was found, she reportedly mailed letters to friends, letting them know she would be hiking up in that area to clear her head. There have also been reports that she mailed one, or possibly two, audio recordings to friends, and it was clear she was distraught and crying during them. Eventually, theories began to emerge that Patricia may have chosen to disappear, or perhaps taken her own life. However, what actually happened has never been determined, as, much like Nita Mayo, Patricia Tallhurst has never been found. Repeated searches failed to turn up any leads or clues, and now, nearly 7 years later, what became of Patricia remains unknown. The sheer fact that her vehicle was found at Donald's Vista, though, has been enough for some to believe there could be a killer stalking that area along Highway 108. 2 years later, on October 2nd, 2016, 68-year-old Breck McDowell Phelps' car was found parked along Highway 108, approximately a quarter mile from Donald's Vista. Phelps, who was supposed to have been going fishing, was last seen the day before his car was found, on the 1st. Being that Phelps had planned to fish and was parked near a trail he had used in the past, investigators searched the area around that trail as well as in the Stanislaus River, but never managed to track down a single trace of Phelps. While the common belief is that he must have fallen into the river during a tragic accident, there's yet to be a resolution, and what exactly occurred that day in October of 2016 also remains unknown. Over the years, there's been a lot of discussion about the disappearances associated with Donald Vista, and while many believe in the possibility that they could all be linked, that there could be someone out there targeting these missing people, at least one of Nita's children has suggested that someone close to home may have played a role in her mother's disappearance. In 2016, while speaking with a reporter from the Independent News, Tracy detailed a bizarre encounter with a man who had been a patient at the hospital where Nita worked. According to Tracy, on the day Nita's car was found, that man showed up and stated he had heard Nita had disappeared, but then been found. This struck Tracy as strange since no searches had yet been conducted. It was very early on in the investigation. Tracy went on to say that the man was interviewed by police and failed a polygraph, but no charges were ever filed, nor did it appear that he was being closely investigated. Years later, in fact 10 years after her mother had disappeared, Tracy drove down to Texas, where the man had later moved, to discuss her mother, but according to her, she wasn't able to get any additional information out of him, and his identity has never been revealed. This year will mark 16 years since Nita Mayo vanished while traveling on Highway 108. Countless searches later, and there's never been a major piece of evidence found. For Nita's family, it's been a nightmare which will never end, but they also will never give up the search. According to the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department, Nita's case is still active and not considered cold. When contacted for comment by KOLO ABC News, a spokesman explained that there were, quote, legitimate leads, end quote. Nita Mary Mayo is described as a white female with brown hair and hazel eyes, standing 5 feet to 5 feet 2 inches tall and weighing approximately 140 pounds. Nita speaks with an English accent and wears prescription eyeglasses with oval lenses and gold wire frames. Her ears are pierced, and at the time of her disappearance, she had highlights in her hair. It's unknown what Nita was wearing the day she disappeared, but her family reports she often wore cotton shirts, jeans, or capris, and white shoes or white sandals. Nita wore jewelry which has never been located, described as a gold mother's ring with a peridot stone, a blue stone, and a purple stone on her right finger. She may also have been wearing a Celtic-style necklace and a silver necklace with one blue and two pink stones in a pendant. She was last seen in Hawthorne, Nevada on August 8, 2005, and her vehicle was recovered at Donnell's Vista along Route 108 in California. It had apparently been parked there since the 8th. For nearly 16 years, Nita's family has had to struggle with the unknown. Having crawled over every inch of land they could, from the steep slopes of Donnell's Vista to the back roads of Hawthorne, they've never given up their search for their beloved mother and grandmother. It is their belief that Nita was likely the victim of foul play, as no trace of her has ever been found, and they believe someone out there knows the truth. When asked about the case just last year, Tracy explained, quote, "We miss her dearly, and she is constantly in our thoughts. If anyone has any information as to her disappearance, please come forward so that our family can finally have the peace we need and pray for daily." Is there something standing in the way of your happiness? Something that stops you from achieving your goals? I've been there more times than I'd like to admit, feeling the weight of everything just crushing down on me. There's nothing wrong with admitting that you could use some help, and thankfully, there's a great service available to you, BetterHelp. BetterHelp assesses your needs and provides you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can easily connect to a safe, secure, and private online environment to discuss the things that are weighing you down. BetterHelp isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done conveniently and securely online. You can message your counselor anytime and receive thoughtful responses. One thing I really love about BetterHelp is the affordability. It's less costly than traditional offline counseling, and they even offer financial aid. Find the help you need, not just what's offered by counselors close to home. BetterHelp provides licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, and so much more. Most importantly, with BetterHelp, everything you share is confidential and counseling is offered securely and conveniently. So many people are using BetterHelp that they've been recruiting additional counselors across all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/trace. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/trace. If you're like me, then finding just the right gift for the one you love can be an incredibly delicate process, especially with Valentine's Day around the corner. Well, thankfully, I recently discovered Ana Luisa, A-N-A-L-U-I-S-A. And since January 14th, they've been offering a sale of 15% off all products. Ana Luisa provides exceptional quality jewelry crafted with care from the best noble metals. Their process offsets 100% of their carbon emissions, starting with the sourcing of their raw materials all the way to disposal. Their production in limited batches not only ensures they meet the highest production standards, but also eliminate excessive waste. I love that I can feel good about buying from Ana Luisa, and the fact that their prices begin at $39 with no luxury markup is like the cherry on top. I just received a gold flower coin necklace that I can't wait to give to my girlfriend. The pendant is beautiful, resembling a sunflower with a fine indentation around the circumference. It feels both strong and lightweight on its fine medium-length chain and can be worn with any look. So are you looking for a fantastic gift for yourself or the one you love? Visit analuisa.com. That's analuisa.com. And take advantage of their sale of 15% off all products. You can still get your order in time for Valentine's Day if you order by Tuesday, February 9th in the United States and Monday, February 8th internationally. So make sure you take advantage of their 15% off all products sale by visiting analuisa.com and getting something special for that special person in your life. The disappearance of Nita Mayo is an exceedingly frustrating and tragic story. A beloved mother and grandmother with an adventurous spirit and a love of exploration vanishes during a day trip through the mountains. 2 days pass before her car is found, and when it is, investigators believe it's only a matter of time before they can locate her. Despite countless searches, though, both by officials and organized by her family, not a trace is found. No shred of cloth, no footprints, nothing. Even tracking dogs fail to pick up her scent. While police were baffled, arguing that she had to be somewhere in the rugged terrain, Nita's family believed she was the victim of foul play. This is a case in which the utter lack of evidence severely hinders any ability to truly determine what could have happened. Outside of Nita's car, which itself failed to deliver much in terms of possibilities, nothing's ever been found, and it's almost as if the 64-year-old vanished into thin air. Then, over the course of the next 11 years, two more people vanish. One's car is found at the same spot as Nita's, Donald's Vista, while the other's was found just a quarter mile away. For some, they speculate there could be a connection, but for others, they argue it's not exactly uncommon for people to disappear into the wilderness of the mountains. In the absence of solid leads and evidence, several theories have been suggested over the years. Some go with a more grounded approach, that Nita either was lost in the wilderness, was injured and couldn't get to help, or may have fallen off a steep embankment. Others turn towards foul play, believing there's a chance Nita could have been victimized by an unknown attacker, perhaps one who's highly familiar with the area and is struck both before and after. Still yet others believe Nita may in fact have been targeted by someone she knew, someone who in the days after her disappearance gave her family a very strange feeling. So let's begin at the top and work our way down. To say the area surrounding Donald's Vista is dangerous would be an understatement. The path itself is safe, so long as you stick to it. It's paved and works its way around the ridge, providing visitors with the ability to view and photograph the beautiful sights without the risk of injury or harm. The trail is listed as an easy level hike, stretching out for just half a mile. However, there are dangers. Several hiking guides note that the path follows closely to some cliffs with sharp drops, and that coyotes, mountain lions, and black bears are in the area. Dogs are allowed in the area, but signs do warn about wildlife and possible threats. It's easy to see that visiting the site can be safe, but it wouldn't take much for a casual look to lead to a lethal result. I think it's interesting that among the items missing from Nita's car was a camera. This, coupled with the area in which she parked, I'm sure, contributed to a theory that she may have walked the trail and slipped while attempting to take a picture. That's one of the most common beliefs of what may have happened, and I can't really rule that out. It's surely possible. I suppose the problem is the fact that after several highly intensive searches involving well-trained and experienced search and rescue teams, nothing was ever found. Now, you'd imagine had Nita slipped, there'd be some indication. The area all around the base of the vista was thoroughly searched, and they never found anything. Not even a shred of clothing or Nita's glasses. According to several reviews I've looked at regarding the vista, the cliffs have many craggy areas into which someone could fall and not be seen. But we also know in this case, people rappelled down the cliff faces, looking into every nook and cranny, and again, nothing. That doesn't necessarily mean Nita couldn't be there, but this wasn't a case where people searched for a week and gave up. They searched time and time again over several years. This also wasn't a search that was limited to the vista itself. That area was searched, but so was a large swath of land surrounding it. Searchers utilized ATVs, horses, and helicopters. There's a lot of dense forestry surrounding the vista, and it wouldn't be difficult for someone inexperienced and unfamiliar with that area to get lost rather quickly. The problem with this case, though, is if the premise is correct that Nita did go there to take some pictures, wandering into the forest would only have impeded that plan. Plus, her own son-in-law, who had hiked with her previously, said she never left the trail, not even when she had someone with her. So why would she do that when she was there by herself? I don't know. We do know that Nita packed a picnic basket and that she used to enjoy having lunch at picnic spots along her trips. There are picnic tables as well as restrooms accessible from Donald's Vista. So surely it's possible she could have stopped there, maybe not so much to walk the trail and get photos, but maybe to have lunch while surrounded by such beautiful scenery. Under those circumstances, it seems less likely she'd have wandered off anywhere, but it's surely possible an animal could have been drawn to the scent of food. The main problem I have with that theory, though, is there would likely be some sign. I know that an animal attack doesn't necessarily leave a discernible trail, but you'd imagine there'd be blood, or at a minimum, Nita's camera or glasses would have been found, yet they never were. So, could clues, or even Nita herself, have been missed throughout all of those searches? Yes. It seems unlikely given how many searches there were and how many people were involved, but we've seen cases in the past where someone disappears, the area searched countless times, and years later they're found somewhere that everyone swears was checked. Reading through the missing 411 books, you'll encounter a lot of theories like that, and while I don't necessarily agree with David Politis's conclusions, I admit that national park disappearances are haunting and confusing, to say the least. So yes, it's possible Nita could still be in that area somewhere. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it was by her own choice, which leads us into the second theory, that a killer may be stalking Highway 108. There have been a lot of bizarre, disturbing, and tragic situations that have occurred in that area. I brought up the cases of both Patricia Tolhurst and Breck Phelps, who later disappeared. And while many people have used those disappearances as the basis upon which to construct a theory regarding a serial killer, or perhaps a series of random crimes, when you really dig into it, there isn't a lot there. In terms of Breck Phelps, his car was found parked near a trail that led to the river where he was going fishing. That was all that was ever found. But both investigators and searchers felt it was fairly likely that Breck either fell into the river or perhaps got lost in the surrounding wilderness. While there was no evidence that that's what happened, there was also no evidence that anything else had happened. In terms of Patricia, there's never been much publicly discussed about her disappearance. However, what has been revealed has led many to believe that this may have been a tragic situation in which she was distraught and possibly not in her right state of mind. I don't really want to speculate about it too much, especially since there's even less information about Patricia's disappearance than there is about Nita's. I think the main thing people latch onto here is that she was never found. Were it the result of suicide, as many believe, it seems unlikely she would mysteriously disappear into the surrounding wilderness. However, no one knows exactly when she got to Donald's Vista, how far she could have walked, or even in what direction she may have gone. In several places, it was stated that Patricia was very experienced in the outdoors and had hiked and camped in similar terrain in the past, which may mean she could have been prepared, or perhaps thought she was. While I'm not going to dismiss the possibility that either of these cases could have been foul play, I can't just leap to that conclusion. So, does that mean a theory about a potential killer or killers lurking in the area is impossible? No. There have been several unsolved disappearances along Highway 108 beyond those I've discussed. For the most part, it's believed people have become lost, gotten injured, and succumbed to their wounds or been victims of animal attacks. However, there is a real possibility that someone could have been hunting for victims in that area. I suppose the problem really comes down to, if that is the case, this person is extremely skilled at covering up his or her trail. All throughout the research on this case, I kept thinking back to episode 139, the disappearance of Patrick Carnes. Carnes vanished while driving along Interstate 80, and his car was later found abandoned in the middle of nowhere. As it turned out, years earlier, the vehicle of Judith Casita had also been found in the same desolate location after she disappeared. To this day, investigators don't know if the two disappearances are connected or if it's some kind of bizarre coincidence. Both of those cars were found approximately 300 miles to the northeast of Donald's Peak. Judith Casita had gone missing on February 14, 2006, 6 months after Nita, and Patrick Carnes on April 13, 2011, 5.5 years after Nita. Now, there's nothing to suggest any direct links here, but there are some similarities which one could find disturbing and curious. According to Tuolumne County investigators, a forensic sweep of Nita's car didn't yield any signs that someone else had been in it. There were apparently no fingerprints, hairs, fibers, or anything to indicate that someone else was driving or was a passenger. This would imply that, at a minimum, Nita probably did turn into Donald's Vista, either with the intention of taking a look around, eating lunch, or maybe just to use a restroom. That doesn't rule out the possibility, though, that someone could have been waiting there, looking for someone to abduct, or perhaps someone who just saw an opportunity. This is an area that draws in a lot of tourists on vacation wanting to see the landscape. In a lot of those cases, you've got people driving vans and campers, vehicles with both the size and privacy to make an abduction easier to execute. While I've read several accounts in which Nita's family has said they weren't sure they believed it was their mother who parked the car there, the evidence we do have seems to make that the most likely possibility. However, Nita has been described as a very kind, caring woman who worked as a nurse and wanted to help others. Could someone have feigned an injury or come running up saying their friend was hurt and needed help, only to lure Nita close enough to grab her? Sadly, those circumstances have happened before, and I don't think that can be ruled out here. We should also take a moment to address the situation involving Jewel Rice, the woman investigators wanted to speak with. Now, authorities never called her a suspect or a person of interest, but they did express their belief that she may have seen or possibly knew something about Nita's disappearance. In at least one article, I read that they later found her car, the one she was having trouble with, and impounded it, but there's never been further development. Rice's photograph is still on Nita's Charlie Project page, but there's no mention of her on either Namus or the Doe Network. I couldn't find a single official source that stated one way or the other if this woman had ever been located and spoken to. In the most recent articles about Nita, there's no mention of her. I did find one person who claimed that the sheriff's department eventually found and spoke to Rice, but that nothing came of it. Unfortunately, I can't find an official source to back that up. Could Rice have been somehow involved? Could she have known someone who might have abducted Nita, or did she witness the crime itself and fled to avoid having to be involved? Maybe. It's possible she could have been a victim of the same person. And if she's never been found after all these years, there's a good chance that's what happened. I've submitted a request to the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Office for further information regarding Jewel Rice, but as of this recording, I haven't heard back. Should they respond, I'll give you an update. Nita absolutely could have come across someone in her travels who had bad intentions and decided to target her for their own twisted reasons. However, there is another aspect to the case which hasn't been very deeply explored, at least not publicly, which could possibly connect Nita's disappearance to someone she had met before, and not just a completely random killer out hunting on Highway 108. And that leads us into the third and final theory. There's not a lot to go with here, so we have to rely on what Tracy told reporters in 2016. According to her, there was a man who had been a patient at the medical facility where Nita worked. This man apparently approached the family the day Nita's car was found and made a statement to the effect that he had heard Nita was missing and that she had been found. According to Tracy, the man behaved strangely and everyone felt his statements and behavior were suspicious. Unfortunately, we don't know who this guy is or what exactly his involvement could have been. Reportedly, this guy was interviewed by investigators and also took a polygraph, which he allegedly failed. While I'm not much of a proponent of polygraphs, nor the veracity of their results, it is interesting that police interviewed this guy and felt that a polygraph was necessary. It's also interesting that in all the years since, he's never been mentioned and investigators have never said they had an actual suspect or person of interest. To me, that either means they don't think this guy was involved, or they do, but they don't have enough to say it publicly. You'd like to imagine, though, that if this was someone they thought could be involved, they'd be keeping track of him in some way. Tracy told reporters that in 2015, 10 years after her mother vanished, she decided she needed to speak to this guy herself. Getting in her car, she made the long drive from North Dakota, where she lives, to Midland, Texas, where this guy had moved. Tracy explained she didn't contact him or tell him she was coming. She didn't even bring anyone with her, which she later acknowledged probably wasn't the wisest choice. But she felt compelled and driven to look this man in the face while she asked questions about her mother's disappearance. Tracy arrived at the man's job, sat down, and waited. When he finally arrived, she simply stared, not speaking a word. According to her, the man appeared nervous as he spoke, recognizing her. They spoke for a period of time, but he never said anything which would suggest he knew what happened to Nita, nor did he say anything even remotely incriminating. I can't imagine what could have been going through Tracy's mind during that conversation, what she felt, or whether or not she believed what the man had told her. But to hang on to one person for a decade makes it feel like if there was anyone that she ever considered a likely suspect, it was probably him. Unfortunately, like nearly all of this case, there's never been any evidence discovered, and police have never even commented on this man, let alone any other potential suspects. There's only a few ways he could have been involved. Either he made some kind of plans to meet with Nita during her trip, or he called her during her trip, though her cell phone records would tell that story. Possibly he could have followed her out of Hawthorne, either approaching her while she was stopped somewhere like Strawberry, or maybe after she pulled into Donald's Vista. I suppose it's even possible he could have encountered Nita before she left Hawthorne, and maybe her family was right, and she was not the one who parked her car that day. Unfortunately, there's just not enough information about this available to know anything for sure. In the end, we know so little about the disappearance of Nita Mayo, and the possibilities are almost endless. With so little evidence and information, it's difficult to narrow things down. It's nearly impossible to develop a solid theory because there's nothing to support one. While some continue to believe Nita likely experienced some kind of a life-threatening situation, either on the paths of Donald Vista or in the surrounding landscape, others believe foul play is the much more likely outcome. For Nita's family, the belief remains strong that someone out there knows exactly what happened to their beloved mother and grandmother. Sadly, unless someone comes forward, new information is discovered, or Nita herself is found, her disappearance will remain open, unsolved, and growing cold. If you're looking for more information about the disappearance of Nita Mayo, there are many news articles and forums discussing her case. There's a group on Facebook, Missing Nita Mayo, where updates and links to other disappearances are frequently posted. If you have any information about the disappearance of Nita Mayo, please contact the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Office at 209-533-5815. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Trace Evidence would not be possible without the support of amazing listeners like you. Now I'd like to take a moment to thank our amazing Patreon producers: Alicia Lorraine, Brittany Bivens, Brian Kemmerling, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, D'Arthi, Denise Dingsdale, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, James, Jennifer Winkler, Joni Berkowitz, Kevin Bonham, Marla Wright, Melissa Breckeisen, Michael Draves, Nick Mohar Schurz, Roberta Jansen, Quinn McBreen, Sarah Levinen, Sarah Mascaritolo, Travis Sepsko, Stephanie Joyner, Stephanie Eve, Tom Archer, Tom Radford, and Tracy Woods. Your contributions to Trace Evidence are invaluable, and your support of the show is both appreciated and humbling. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence, getting cool merch, and having access to commercial-free episodes, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence. That concludes this episode of Trace Evidence. I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.